You're listening to episode number 5 of the WBH Radio Podcast. My name is William Holly. Pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you for taking the time out to listen. So what did we learn this week? Well, we got ourselves a new Super Bowl champion. Last week, the Philadelphia Eagles defeated the New England Patriots with a score of 41-33. Now, in the weeks past, I've talked about how when I watch sports, I just want to see two great competitors go at it. Two people playing their best ball, doing the best they can to win. And I think that's exactly what we saw last Sunday. There weren't really any mistakes during the game. No missteps, no calls you can really question. Just two heavyweight champs going at it. And sticking with that boxing analogy, the New England Patriots are like the storied champion. You know, they've been in a Super Bowl with Belichick and Tom Brady 8 times. The grizzled, tough champion. And here comes Philadelphia Eagles. The contender, the little engine that could. Throwing any haymaker they can, hoping to dethrone the champ. In fact, the Philadelphia Eagles, they are the Rocky story. Rocky was from Philadelphia, right? It was in Philly where he was running up those steps. Oh, yeah, okay. You guys know it. And it was just a great performance by both teams. And I just got to credit the Philadelphia Eagles. There was a level of fearlessness in their gameplay, in the play calling. They weren't concerned with not losing the game. No. They were determined, yo, we're going for it. We're going to win the game. We're going to control our own destiny. What do we say in the cities, in the hood? We say scared money don't make money. You got to be willing to take chances to experience the glory. And that play they had earlier in the second half was the prime example of what happens when you go for it, when you take chances. Yeah, you may be a GOAT, but the opportunity for great reward is worth the shot. So early in the first half, the Philadelphia Eagles was 4th and goal. I guess everything in the book says, yeah, you play it safe and you kick it. The Eagles said, nah, man, we this close to the end zone. Let's go for the touchdown. And they went for the touchdown with a non-traditional play, a play that saw the quarterback receiving the ball. Had that play failed, you know how much ridicule they would have experienced? They really exposed themselves there. And that's where the fearlessness comes from. Yo, I don't care what y'all gonna say about me if this doesn't work. Nah, I want to sip from the cup, the champagne, so I'm going for it. If it doesn't work, we'll take it on the chin. So they call a play on 4th and goal that has one of the skilled players throwing a touchdown to the quarterback. And it worked. And to me, that play alone, that fearlessness, that willingness to take a chance, to not be scared, is the reason they are champions today. Because the New England Patriots were coming. They were on the Eagles' heels all game. And in fact, in the past, when we've seen the Patriots be successful, a large part of their success comes from intimidating their opponents. Their opponents being in places where they don't feel comfortable and they start to play scared. Case in point, last year's Super Bowl, the Atlanta Falcons were up 28-3 over the New England Patriots in the second half. And they were not able to close that game. Why, you ask? Because they took their foot off the gas. Because they start second-guessing their every move. Well, we're up by 28-3. Do you really think we should? They got concerned with not losing the game instead of continuing to push forward and trying to win the game. Now, that may be semantics tomorrow, but I think there's a big difference there. There was a sitcom I used to like growing up. It's called Smart Guy. It was about a little kid. He was like 10, 11 years old, and he was a genius. So they had him in high school. So can you imagine being in high school at 10, 11 years old? High school was hard enough at 16, 17-year-old. So he's 10 years old. He's a genius. He's in high school. He has 2 siblings in high school. They're high school age, 16, 17. So the young man, the smart guy, the genius, he has a big matchup, a chess matchup against a computer. I think the first time he faced the computer, he lost. And, you know, he's reeling. He's like, man, how can I beat this guy? So he ends up practicing against his brother. Now, his brother wasn't the smartest guy. His brother played an unorthodox way of chess. Now, that unorthodox way was able to prepare the genius, the smart guy. He's like, wow, you know, those moves are not traditional. No expert would recommend to make these moves. But hey, you might be on to something. Watching you play this way will give me another angle to beat the computer. So at first he thought his brother was a joke, but then he realized, yo, these unorthodox moves. Hey, I could take this to beat that computer. And he eventually ended up beating the computer. And I draw that similarity to the Super Bowl. Philadelphia played an unorthodox game. I mean, throwing touchdowns to your quarterback? Where they do that at? Going for it on fourth down numerous times? Those actions allowed them to be crowned king, to be crowned champion of the world. Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. And no shame to the New England Patriots. They could walk out of there with their head held high. So, of course, after that loss by the New England Patriots, the story becomes what happens next. You got Gronk contemplating retirement. The story of Malcolm Butler, the cornerback who played a large part of the New England Patriots season, yet he didn't get a defensive snap in the Super Bowl. That has a lot of people's attention. But I'm going to bring some of my guys in later on in the podcast, and we'll discuss that. I wanted to get into the New England Patriots assistant head coach and offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniel. He was scheduled to take over the head coaching job for the Indianapolis Colts. But in the last minute, in the 24th hour, he decided, hey, guys, no thank you. I don't want the job with the Indianapolis Colts. I'm going to stay with the New England Patriots. Now, today, Josh McDaniels is getting bashed. Like, man, how could you do that to the Indianapolis Colts? And I admit, he put the Colts in a tough position because they held this job for weeks waiting on him. That means other great coaching candidates have already been hired. This change of mind by Josh McDaniels put the Indianapolis Colts in a bad spot. Indeed. But guess what? I don't care. I said time and time again, at the end of the day, we are responsible for ourselves and our families and what they write about us when it's all said and done. And if Josh McDaniels thinks the best move for his career, for his family, is staying in New England, then that's what he should do. This is big business, man. The Indianapolis Colts, hey, it is tough indeed, and I feel for you. But Josh McDaniels doesn't owe you guys anything. Josh McDaniels, people seem to forget that, yo, it's the game of sports, the game of football, but it's also the game of life. A lot of factors go into these decisions. You know, I've worked in professional clubhouses and professional locker rooms where the fans are out there, they're rabid, they're hyped up, it's a big game, it's the playoffs. And a coach might be in the back room on FaceTime with his daughter watching her recital. Or he's stressing because his child has a soccer tryout, things of that nature. He has us book him a train or a flight to get back home as soon as he can after this game because he needs to tend to some issues back home. People seem to forget that part. So it was reported that Josh McDaniels, well, the last minute the Patriots came in, their brain trust, which is their owner Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, they came back in and they kind of sweetened the pot to incentivize Josh McDaniels to stay put. Like, hey, man, we're going to give you some job security. And they say Josh McDaniels, who's a father of four, ages 12 to 3, that was key for him. Where my kids don't have to change schools. Okay. I'm willing to listen. They also said his coach, his mentor, Bill Belichick, will work harder to show him the inner workings of a team. like how to construct the roster, how to manage the salary cap. So those tools, that knowledge will help Josh McDaniels be a better coach in the future. So I really have no issue with Josh McDaniels choosing to stay. And another thing, people talked about, yo, Tom Brady's 40 years old. Why would you want to stay in New England? That run seems to be coming to an end. But in Indianapolis, they have a young stud at quarterback in Andrew Luck. Why don't you go to where the better player is with the better upside? My argument, in football, more than any other sport, it's more about staying with a strong organization rather than trying to latch on to any specific player. Now, in the NBA, yo, you need a star to win. If LeBron James is playing in Podunk, Idaho, hey, that's a good job to take. But in football, not so much. Let's look at the four teams that played in the championship games. It was the Minnesota Vikings. It was the Philadelphia Eagles, the New England Patriots, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Blake Bortles, not that good. Minnesota Vikings quarterback Case Keenum, not so good. Nick Foles just won a Super Bowl MVP. Would anybody argue that he's a great quarterback? Not really. So in football, it's not about, yo, he needs to run because Andrew Luck is over there and he needs to attach himself to that great quarterback. No. In football, what you want to do is attach yourself to a steady organization. I believe that's what truly wins out. Bill Belichick, the head coach of the New England Patriots, and Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, I believe are just as responsible for that team's success as any player that has come through there. I truly believe that. So you asking Josh McDaniels to uproot himself and his family and move to Indianapolis and play for a gentleman by the name of Jim Irsay. Jim Irsay owns the Indianapolis Colts. Jim Irsay, in 2014, was arrested for driving reckless. They said the man couldn't even stand when he was pulled over. Driving reckless, had trouble standing, and slurred speech. He was found with $29,000 in cash and a suitcase of prescription pills. Is that the man you want to work for? Is that the organization you want to put your coaching career in their hands? You want to put your family future in their hands? Jim Irsay's actions are reckless by itself. But you know what makes it even more reckless? It's because he's a freaking billionaire. Dog, if you want to do your dirt, get you a limo driver. Trust me, I worked in the business and had to help people to their door because they passed out drunk or who God knows whose drug. If you're a billionaire, why are you driving your own car? So that with drugs and cash, that compounds the stupidity. The fact that you actually have resources to do better. So Indianapolis, you guys got spurned today, but Josh McDaniels, I think you made the right move. If the Patriots say, hey, we're going to invest in you, you could be the heir apparent, you're going to have stability, you get to align yourself with a great quarterback, and not only a great quarterback, but somebody who many have reported is your good friend in Tom Brady, that's the situation to stay in. Yo, take a quick break. Be right back. WBH Radio Podcast. Welcome back to episode number 5 of WBH Radio Podcast. Your host, William Holly here. Yo, it's almost time for baseball again. Almost time for the baseball season. Spring training is taking place next week. But last week, the Baseball Hall of Fame put out their 2018 class. Yo, I must be getting old because I remember when all of these guys came in to the major leagues, watched their whole career play out, and now they're going in the Hall of Fame. Damn. But a few names, dude by the name of Vlad Guerrero, he was cool. Trevor Hoffman was a closer. And Chipper Jones. I'll tell you a quick story about Chipper Jones. Chipper Jones used to play for the Atlanta Braves. And every year, they would battle the Mets in the National League East. That was their conference. And this one, the Mets played at Shea Stadium. Chipper used to be so successful in Shea Stadium that he named one of his sons Shea. Tell me that ain't gangster, man. So the Mets, y'all stadium, Shea, like, y'all called him daddy for years, and now it takes place every day in his own household. So that's pretty cool, man. I like to hear stuff like that. But my issue, of course, is with the guys that they kept out of the Hall of Fame. Mr. Barry Bonds. Okay, now Barry Bonds has been kept out because many believe he used illegal drugs. Just being a casual fan of the sport, I said, okay, I mean, if that's what y'all want to do, keep him out. Regardless of the fact that he leads baseball history as the number one home run hitter, if that's what y'all want to do to your game, more power to you. But as I worked in baseball last season, you know, I started to look at the sport a little bit differently, pay more attention, read some more things. I have a big issue with them keeping him out. So let's go back to 1998. 1998, Major League Baseball had an epic home run race between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Yo, you couldn't help but pay attention to the TVs that summer. Every other bat, they were hitting home runs. They really captured the world's attention. Now, in 1998, I was 13 years old. So I didn't really know baseball history. I was just, yo, this is what they do. These guys are power hitters. They're hitting home runs. And then Bonds, a few years later, he went on his tear. And that's when the story started to come out. Like, yo, these guys are on steroids. They're juicing. Shame on them. But what I realize now is these players didn't just come out of nowhere and catch the world by surprise. My belief is everybody around the game knew what was taking place. The commissioner, the writers, the coaches, everybody knew. Now, again, me as a 13-year-old kid, I didn't know. I didn't have enough of a baseball history or sample size to compare what these guys were doing to other times in baseball. I didn't know. But if you are one of these writers or baseball historian who was close to the game at that point, you know it's impossible to hit 25 home runs 1 year, 25 home runs 1 year, 25 home runs 1 year, and then 50 the next, and to do it at an advanced age. You writers, you commissioners, you coaches, you all knew. And therefore, you guys are all complicit. See, again, as a young boy, I thought these steroid abusers just hoodwinked the whole world. But no, you guys all knew. And recently I read Joe Torre's book, The Yankee Years, and he talked about in that book how it was known amongst everybody in baseball. In fact, there was a player by the name of Rick Helland who he would try to bring it up in meetings with a baseball players association. Like, hey guys, this is what's going on. What are we going to do about it? Because Rick Helland's fear was that if you allow these drug users to continue to prosper, you're forcing the clean guys to make that same decision. Because the clean guys are losing their jobs to the steroid users. So you either lose your job and go home with no money, you can't pay your mortgage, can't feed your family, or you're forced to join in the race and say, dang, I got to keep up. I got to compete. I got to earn my money. So I find it shameful that these writers are now waving a finger at Barry Bonds. But yo, when Barry Bonds was tearing the cover off the ball, guess what? Those little articles you were writing in the newspaper, they were getting more coverage. Those magazines you guys were writing in, they were flying off the shelves because people were reading. So you capitalized off of whatever dirt you think Bonds has done. Now, for the record, Bonds never failed a drug test. Okay? So it's really you guys just using your power and your discretion. Well, his head grew bigger and he had acne on his back, so he's a steroid user. We're keeping him out. How can you wave a finger at Bonds when you are complicit? You're an accomplice. Bud Selig, the former commissioner of baseball, gets honored and he gets to go in the Hall of Fame. Dog, you knew it wasn't possible for people who hit 20 home runs their whole life to go to 60 at an advanced age. Now that I'm older, I'm 32 years old and I've seen baseball for years on years, I know it's comical to think somebody could hit 70-something home runs. I see now that I have a large enough sample size, you guys around the game at that point, you knew what those guys were doing was video game numbers. You knew that. Now, true baseball historians, they will tell you that Barry Bonds, prior to when they think he abused drugs, was probably the greatest player of all time. They will tell you that. They will say, yo, flat out, that man was a stud. Way better than Mark McGwire and these Sammy Sosa. No, Barry Bonds is one of the greatest to ever play the games before drugs, before they believe he started to juice. But again, Barry Bonds and guys of that ilk who at one point were clean, they saw these bums start to get all the accolades, the attention, and the money, and they said, hey, I have to compete. So, if these writers had did their job and raised attention about the travesty, about the doping, about the dirt that was going on with Mark McGwire and the Sammy Sosas and all these individuals, you would have protected Bonds from having to turn to drugs. Had you done your job as reporters, you could have played your part in raising awareness about the dirt and cleaning up the game so pure talents, mega talents like Barry Bonds would never have to take that route. So I can make an argument that you forced his hand because the media, the people that are supposed to relay the truth to the public, you let him down. You celebrated guys like Mark McGwire who you know could never do that without the assistance of drugs. You forced Bonds' hands. Bonds is sitting there minding his business, being the greatest that ever was, and y'all over there celebrating those bums. Bonds was like, okay, I'm going to show y'all boys how I really get down. And we seen when he started to, well, when he went through that stage when many people believed he started to do drugs, we saw astronomical things. We saw 73 home runs in a season. Yo, Barry Bonds is the first person I seen get walked with the bases loaded. The team was like, yo, we'll give up a run because if we pitch to this guy, he's going to hit a grand slam and clear all these bases. So we'll give up one run. Y'all hear what I say? They walked the man with the bases loaded. Like, yo, here, you can have a run. That's how dangerous he was. So to the Baseball Hall of Fame, to you writers who now wave a finger at the likes of Bonds, to you commissioners who shun Bonds and say, oh, we don't really want him around the game, all you mofos are just as dirty. Just as dirty. Y'all got some nerve now waving a finger when your salaries got boosted because the sponsorship dollars started to grow around the game because of the home run. That's dishonorable, man. Y'all capitalized off of the steroids and the attention it brung. But now that it's over, y'all running for cover. Try to save your own ass. And y'all leaving guys like Bonds out to dry. Straight shameful, man. Take a quick break. Be right back. Yo, welcome back to episode number 5 of the WBH Radio Podcast. I'm your host, William Holly. Recording here on the campus of Brooklyn College. Special shout out to the students here at WBCR for holding me down. But yo, last week, the WWE, well, when I was a kid, it was WWF, but the WWE celebrated 25 years of Monday Night Raw. Yo, I don't watch much wrestling, but yo, I had to tune in for a little bit of that. You know, watching Stone Cold Steve Austin, watching Triple H. I mean, these guys were reality TV before reality TV came out. But yo, Will, wrestling is scripted. Trust me. Whatever show you like right now, Real Housewives, Love & Hip Hop, it's scripted too. Don't get it twisted. But wrestling always has been good fun, produced some great personalities. Shoot, the biggest movie star in the world right now, Dwayne Johnson, started in WWE. And somebody who will be joining WWE in the near future is former UFC Women's Champion Ronda Rousey. Now, Ronda Rousey is somebody I classify as a fraud. So it makes sense that she would be joining the ranks of WWE. In fact, I take that back. Because WWE got some honorable people, some straight people that's over there working hard, fighting for their slice of American pie. But to me, Ronda Rousey is somebody who, when things were going good, she was running around here flying high. I remember one fight, she wouldn't even shake her opponent's hand. Like, she thought she was the meanest, toughest dun-dutter on the scene. I mean, at one point, she challenged Floyd Mayweather to a fight. Like, she just thought she was a wrecking ball just flying through entertainment. But then she got punched in the face. And what did she do? She went into hiding. After she lost to Holly Holm in, I believe, 2015, yo, you couldn't find her. It was like trying to find Where's Waldo. Damn, I'm showing my age again. Where's Waldo? But you really couldn't find her. You know, she skipped the post-fight press conference, which most fighters will tell you, like, yo, this is part of the job. I've seen Conor McGregor, who fights on the men's side of UFC, I've seen him show up to the post-fight press conference, face swollen and bruised, sunglasses on, but he showed up because that's what the job entails. And the UFC commissioner, Dana White, he wouldn't let him get out of it. But for some reason, they let Ronda Rousey get away with that. Now, again, I hate folks that when it's all good, they the coolest people. When Ronda Rousey was winning her fights, she was out there talking about women's rights and we're fearless and I got to be an example to these young girls. But the minute adversity hit, crickets. Now, what message is that sending to our young women? You couldn't find her. No social media posts, nothing. You selling books when it's all good. You on book tours. But, yo, when you get knocked out, when you face defeat, you can't stand up and face that? That's the best time to get out and talk to the fans and the young women you claim to be about. Like, look, man, I faced defeat today, but guess what? I'll be better tomorrow. But no, you took the cowardly way and you ran. That's a disservice to everybody that supported you, everybody that brought your books, stood in line for your little movies or whatever you did. And you know what really pisses me off about that? Because I really think it does a disservice to the movement of minorities, whether a person of color or a woman. And I wrote a piece on my website, WBHradio.com, and I asked, do minorities truly want equality? Reaching equality is not an easy task. And I think with minorities, we won't really reach equality until we stop allowing concessions to be made for us. You know, equality can't be a thing of convenience only when it works for you. So Ronda Rousey loses a fight and she sneaks out the back door and doesn't go to the post-game press conference. You allowed the UFC to make a concession for you. They don't make those concessions for Conor McGregor, for Johnny Bones Jones. So if you claim to be for equality, that's the time you stand up and say, no, give me the mic. Let me stand up here with my face bruised and bloodied and talk to the people. If that's what the guys got to do, I'm about women's rights. I'm about equality. Here, let me stand up and do that. But no, you didn't. And again, I think acts like that set the movement back. They set the movement back. And that wasn't it for Ronda Rousey. So she lost that fight. She didn't fight for a whole other year. Again, no public appearances. We couldn't find her. So a date comes out that she's going to fight. She did no pre-fight promotion. And any fighter will tell you that is key to the success of a fight. We got to get out there and sell it. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor traveled the world insulting each other on stage to raise attention about the fight, to get more pay-per-view buys. Ronda Rousey did none of that. Another concession being made for her. When Conor McGregor tried to do that with the UFC, Dana White said, no. Yo, bro, your duties are to come out here and promote this thing. He was fighting Nate Diaz. And McGregor was like, you know what? Nah, man, I need to really hunker down and train. I lost to Nate Diaz previously. Let me get in and train, man. I cut my promotion schedule in half. Dana White like, uh-uh. But for some reason, they let Ronda Rousey get away with it. And Ronda Rousey allowed those concessions to be made for her. Again, if you're about equality, if you're about being equal, that's when you stand up and say, no, Dana White, put me on the same rigorous promotion schedule. But no, you were in hiding, man. This is why I classify her as a fraud. My man Hov says shit was all good just a week ago. Being a leader, being a winner, being a champion is not just when it's convenient. I seen Michael Jordan win 6 championships. But I've also seen him end his season on a losing note. You know what? He put that suit and tie on just the same and stepped to the podium. Not Rousey. So again, she got out of the promotion schedule. She didn't want to do that. So here comes fight night. She got her ass beat again. And the same thing took place. She went into hiding. Disrespecting the fans of the UFC. Disrespecting her own personal fans. And for some reason, the UFC let her get away with it. And Ronda Rousey did nothing to change that. She didn't insist on being held to an equal standard at that time. No, because it was convenient for her to not have to speak to the media. But now she's back on the public scene because she's about to join WWE, get a paycheck. So the only time you address your fans is when you're peddling something to them? I couldn't back a person like that. I can't back somebody like that. Who's only around when the sun is outside. Nah, that's a weak individual to me. And Ronda Rousey, like, I really think you did a disservice to the movement. For women, for minorities. Because you refuse to hold yourself to the standard that everybody else is playing by. You manipulated the loopholes when it was convenient for you. That's not right. One of my favorite women in sports is a woman by the name of Michelle Roberts. She is the head of the Professional Basketball Players Association. So she's responsible for the negotiation that group does with the NBA. She represents the players. She represents LeBron. She represents Chris Paul. And every time you see an interview with her, they try to play up the point that she's a black woman. So that's two minority groups. Not only is she a woman, but she's a black woman. They try to play up that part of the story. But she says, no. No. I mean, it's great. I'm a woman. It's great that I'm black. But what's most important is that I am the best person for this job. Don't get it twisted. You know, I'm playing by the same rules as everybody else. And she wants to make that point. She emphasizes that point. And I love that because that's equality. You know, stop celebrating that, oh, I'm the first woman here. I'm the first black here. No. Just be the best at the job. Just be equal all around and not just when it's convenient. And Ronda Rousey didn't exercise that. And that's why she's a fraud. In fact, some of the WWE women that have been there, they've been taking shots at her through social media. In fact, there was one comment, I think The Rock liked it or something. Nobody respect that. You go running, hiding every time adversity hit. But yo, I'm going to take a quick break. I got some friends coming back with me on the other side. Run through a few quick topics. Be right back. Welcome back to episode number five of the WBH Radio Podcast. Man, I got tired of talking to myself, so I got some family in the building with me today. First, I have a former college teammate with me, played at Kingsborough Community College. He moved on to Division II Mansfield. The prodigal son of Dominica, my man D.A. D.A., what up?
What's up?
Got another homie with me. Been down for too long, man. Too long. He's in here with a heavy heart this week. Lost his younger cousin this week.
Rest in peace, T.O.
For real, man. Y'all know how we do in the hood, man. Cousin, sister, we all under one roof. I was definitely family. Many days I done knocked on your door, and she was the one that answered, and she just gave me that face like, Negro, you again? I'm like, yeah, T.O., love you too, baby. But definitely, rest in peace to T.O. Got my man Fent in the building. Fent.
What's going on, radio? We live.
We live, man. One day at a time, though, for real. Rest in peace. I wanted to put a bow on the NFL season, on the Super Bowl.
NFL season never ends. That's how they set it up for you.
Nah, man. Yo, but listen. I said early on the podcast, I said, yo, I really had no issue with what went on. You know, two heavyweight fighters swinging, throwing haymakers, the New England Patriots, the story champion, the Philadelphia Eagles. I liken them to Rocky. I mean, Rocky's from Philly, ain't he?
Yeah, that was a classic underdog in the Super Bowl. Hollywood couldn't make it better than that.
But I don't know if everybody saw it that way. I know my man D.A. was texting me like, yo, Will, man, how can the vaunted Bill Belichick allow the Philadelphia Eagles to score 30 points on him? So I'm going to just open the floor to you guys. D.A., first, what'd you see out there on Sunday?
Man, disappointed.
Somebody's feelings is hurt, man.
Yeah, but you can't, I mean, you play a football game and you give up 41 points, you can't expect to win. Like, do you?
Unless you score 42.
I mean, you have to score 42. I mean, you can't even put the game on the offense.
But, yo, let me ask you this. Yes or no question to both of you. Did the best team win? The team with the most talent, did they win?
I think so, yes.
Yes, 100%.
So then you can't fault I agree with you. You can't fault the Patriots for coming up short. They were on the Eagles' heels the whole game. And I think that's the genius of the Patriots. They've always just maximized their potential. Even if they had inferior talent. But what we saw in the Eagles was a fearless group. You know, most teams, they play it tight. They play it close to the vest. The Eagles was going for it. Fam, what about that fourth down play where they had the freaking quarterback receiving? What you thought about that?
To me, that was the play that broke the camel's back for me.
Straight up.
I think the Eagles were up a touchdown and a half, about 10 points or something like that. Or, sorry, a touchdown. That fourth and one, when you go for it and you complete a play like that on fourth and one, game is over. I don't care what happens after that. Page could score 10 touchdowns. The Eagles have to win after that. After that happened, I turned the game off. I thought it was over.
Yo, that's exactly right, man. That's a team going for it. Most teams, they trying not to lose the game. The Eagles said, F it, we going for it. In fact, if I was a Atlanta Falcons fan or Atlanta Falcons player, the team that lost to the Patriots last season after having a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, y'all be kicking myself.
Yeah,
it
definitely.
It must hurt.
Like, yo, that's what happened when you play fearlessly.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was fearless. I just figured that they knew that if they took their feet off the gas, they saw what happened last year, they can't do that. So I don't know if it was fear of the Patriots coming back or fear of looking bad, losing like Atlanta Falcons last year when they had the Patriots beat. I don't know if it's fear or guts, but they took it. Hands down. Shout out to the champs, Philadelphia Eagles.
Shout out to the champs. And you know the crazy thing, Nick Foles was the quarterback for the Eagles. He won the MVP. Yo, he was considering retiring before the season. You know what I'm saying? So it shows how important, like, one decision could change the course of your life. Now he's forever an NFL MVP.
He got a big check coming.
History.
A Super Bowl MVP for sure. But, yo, another story coming out of the game is the Patriots defensive back Malcolm Butler and him being benched. This is somebody that played 97% of the snaps for the team this year, and he didn't play not one defensive snap in the Super Bowl. And not only that, but he learned he was not playing prior to the national anthem.
Ice cold.
Do you feel that's Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, just being ruthless? What'd you think about that scenario? How do you think the Patriots handled that, D.A.?
That's ignorance, man. You let somebody
Why know. Ignorance? Why ignorance?
He's a cocky dude.
Who Bill you talking just, about?
Bill, the know-it-all dude.
He hasn't earned that right?
I don't know. I mean, and he's supposed to be the smartest guy in the room, right? The guy who goes into the halftime, makes adjustments, does all this stuff. You could have get one stop all day. Your best cornerback for the last 3 years.
But listen, hold on. How should the Patriots have handled that Malcolm Butler situation? Is your problem with them notifying him before the game? What exactly is the issue with it?
I don't know. And he just said he's going to put the best players in position to, you know, for the teams to win the games. But I don't get it. Like what? Nobody knows. No, he never said what happened.
Patriots don't open the vault, man.
But that's the thing. He's not telling you what happened because nothing happened except for his play was subpar. We've seen over the years that the Patriots have cut ties with players at a moment's notice. Could his play have diminished and he warranted not being played?
He played the whole game against
Tennessee?
Against the Jaguars?
Against the Jaguars. He played all the snaps against Tennessee. Things happened.
Things was all good just a week ago.
No, but he declined as from a Pro Bowl player to an average corner this year. So I don't want to say his play diminished where he couldn't have played in that game. If he played all year, it doesn't make sense. Something doesn't add up. Something had to happen, and this is obviously a disciplinary action by Coach Bill Belichick. But I want to ask the question to you guys. Would you think this would have happened if it was Tom Brady, if it was Gronk, if it was Amendola, if it was Hightower on the defense, somebody else that has a pivotal role in that organization on the field, would you think they'd be penalized the same way that Coach Belichick did to Malcolm Butler?
Hold on, fam. Yo, we can't say that it's a disciplinary action. A report came out that Malcolm Butler might have been associated with weed and missing curfew, and Butler adamantly denied that, and then Tom Brady went on social media and supported him and thanked him. Y'all really think this is just Bill Belichick's cutthroat ways? 3 years ago, Malcolm Butler came on the scene when he made that big play in the Super Bowl. Nobody knew him before that. So I think this is just Bill Belichick
maximizing talent.
His mantra is, yo, next man up. He's not a slave to the names. Bill Belichick has cut a dude Super Bowl week in years past. So he didn't cut this guy, but he said, yo, you're not playing. And this is my take. He let him know before the national anthem. Everybody's saying that's cold-blooded. I didn't know how to feel about that at first. Then I thought about it. Yo, DA, if we have a big game, what's the night before like? What are we doing? What are we discussing the night before a big game?
The game. What are we going to do? What are we going to approach the game? The game.
We having fun. We hype. Yo.
Yeah.
If he told Malcolm Butler days prior, yo, you're not playing.
Yeah.
That's changing the mental preparation for him and his teammates around him.
You're right.
Instead of being hype, it's like, damn, Butler, you ain't playing, dog.
Go out there and win it for Butler.
But instead, Bill Belichick told him right before the national anthem. Now that I look at it, I think that's perfect timing. Everybody done going through their warm-ups, they hype. The Eagles came out to Meek Mill. I don't know what song the Patriots came out to. Everybody's got a good week of solid practice and ready for the game.
And then you let the air out the bag before the coin toss?
If you let him know right before the coin toss, yo, I mean, we already here, man. There's no turning back now. I'm ready for this game. I can't devote too much attention to Butler not playing. My mind is already in the game. Yo, I thought it was more genius from Belichick actually letting him know right then before for the national anthem. The next part, of course, is this the end of the Patriots' run? They lost their defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia.
I think that was a good move. Who put up 41 points on Matt Patricia's defense? Nick Foles? Get him out of here.
But also, Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, he was set to take a job with the Colts. But at the last minute, he burned them and said, nah, man, I'm staying in New England.
That reminds me of a guy that did the same thing.
Who?
There's a certain brother sitting across from me who was set to go to Indianapolis. That's for a good portion of 2017. But you know what he did? Nah, I'm not going. I'm staying home. I'm working with the Yankees.
Nah, the NCAA fired me on my day off. So we're not going to get into that. But Josh McDaniels, yeah, he spurned the team. What responsibility does he have to the coach? Should he have taken a job? Should he have gave him more advance notice? Fan, you a cold-blooded dude. What do you think about that scenario?
I think if I ain't signed my name on the dotted line, then I have no obligation to nobody but myself at the end of the day.
D.A., how you think McDaniels handled that, man? Is that ruthless?
I mean, why would they want somebody that's not even sure they want to come there anyway?
True.
But they didn't know he wasn't sure he wanted to come. This is how it go. They make the announcements after that coach finishes with the team he was already with. They had every inclination, that every belief that he was coming to join the staff. That's why they weren't so searching for coaches. Like, it was kind of a handshake deal.
I mean, but for him, though, it's good. Like, he's not sure he want to go there. You know, like, you guys, I'm not ready. And it's okay. Like, we see a lot of people thirsty to get head coaching jobs and get in there and embarrass himself. Even Josh himself, when he went to the Broncos.
Yep, that would have been his second stint with a quarterback.
I mean, so, we're just not sure. You know, he hasn't spoken about it yet. I'm not trying to defend the guy. I mean, it's obviously a tough for the Colts, but, like, why would I do something I'm not even sure about?
Fam, what we say in the hood, all money ain't good money? So I guess he said, yo, I may have a head coaching slot right now with the Colts, but if it doesn't work out, that's probably the end of my opportunities. But let me ask you this. What do you say to the people who say, yo, Tom Brady's an aging quarterback. Andrew Luck is a rising star in the NFL. Why don't you go over there and coach that young man? Tom Brady's 40 years old. His years are limited. Go with the young stud.
In the last 3 years, who played more games, Tom Brady or Andrew Luck?
Andrew Luck has been battling injuries, but everybody believes he'll be back. But, you know, the crazy thing with the Colts situation is that they actually signed contracts with some of the assistant coaches.
But the owner's going to honor those contracts, which I don't see the point in that. You're going to bring in...
Right, you're going to honor those contracts. So those guys have a job, but you're going to... But when a head coach comes in,
he brings in his guy.
You're supposed to give him the opportunity to bring in his own guys. So now if a coach has to take that job with assistants already in place, it's a less desirable job. I was joking. I said this earlier in the podcast. I said, watch them hand it to a minority now.
I mean, that's the perfect move. Set him up to fail.
Set him up to fail.
Oh, like, oh, he can't do it. Look what happened. We gave him a team, everything in place, and he still couldn't do it.
But, yeah, I want to switch gears, talk about the NBA real quick. Now that the football season is over.
NBA season didn't start yet.
Now is when it starts, man. We got the mad dash until the finals until June. One of my earlier podcasts, I was kind of crushing all them boys that came out of Kentucky. John Wall was kind of number one on my list. I thought he was a career underachiever. He was somebody that was talented, but he didn't always make his teams better. In fact, at the time, he didn't even have a sneaker contract. He has one now, though. He just signed something with Adidas.
Shout out to John Wall.
Word, get your money, brother. We ain't hating over here. But yo, so the man goes down with an injury, and everybody starts to wonder, yo, how are the Wizards going to survive without their point guard? Yo, since his injury, they went 5-1. 5-1. The dude they gave a max contract to, the dude that has the ball in his hands a large part of the time, the number one assist guy, his team went 5-1 without him. Now, I got my man D.A. here in the building. I definitely want to get his take. D.A., he wasn't a professional basketball player, but I seen him stand toe-to-toe with everybody that he faced, including some guys who went on to be professionals. D.A., no team you've played on would go 5-1 in your absence. You know, I think that's an indictment against any player. So, D.A., how do you explain to an NBA fan that's behind John Wall, who talks about how great he is, how irreplaceable he is, how do you explain to them that his team goes 5-1 without him?
Let me just start off by saying, I don't think the Wizards are better without John Wall, honestly. But the way...
Talk to me, man. I hear you going there. That's what I want to hear. I agree. They're not better. But go ahead. They're not better without John Wall. But
it's like an indictment on the coaching. And the people... The players, including John Wall himself, obviously he's very talented, very skillful. The what he brings to the court, you can't get that off the streets like that. Like, he's special. No argument here. But if you watch them play, they pass the ball more, they cut more, they rely on each other more. So the team, you know, getting a positive feedback from the way they're playing.
Right.
Now, I'm not too shocked on the result because this can happen, but I'm just interested to see what happens when he comes back.
Right.
So, John Wall want to come back and be John Wall, you know, sneaker contract dude, you know, got to make the All-Star team.
Yeah. Another thing, not only did they go 5-1, but you hear a little chirping from the locker room, and guys are talking about, yo, the ball is really moving. Marcin Gortat, who's a player on the Wizards, he tweeted out something where he said great team victory, and he put team in quotations, you know, kind of insinuating that, hey, maybe when Wall is in, we're not a team.
That's exactly what it is. I think so. Because you have plenty of players that think they're nice, right?
Right.
Do things is nice. He comes in the game, yeah, I got it. I got everything. Yo, I got it.
Right.
I got to talk. I got everything. But at the end of the day, you put do things together, miracle happens, man.
Right.
I mean, it makes the game easier and your efficiency better when the team is playing better as a team, opposed to one person controlling the offense and running the offense. If that person is running the offense and he determines that he has a better opportunity than initiating the offense with his team, I can't fault John Wall for taking over in a situation like that. But I do give credit to the team because they did not win some cupcake wins. They beat OKC. They beat... the Cavs, well, I don't know about the Cavs anymore, but they beat some good teams in this 5-1 run. Yeah, they beat Toronto as well. But you're gonna play up if one of your guys go down, you gotta raise your level.
Raise your level. It's not guys rallying around John Wall. It's that John Wall, he is a mega talent.
Yeah.
Yes.
His style of play.
But his style of play is not
20-10.
I don't give a freak about arbitrary numbers, fam. Stop. Yo, to me, basketball, son, is like, it's like the Henry Ford assembly line. You know, somebody's responsible for putting on the engine. Somebody's responsible for putting on the transmission. Together, we put this whole car together. Okay, John Wall is a nice shiny. He puts the engine together, but he's knocking everybody else's workstation over. You know, he's stepping on everybody else's toes. He's getting his and then neutering everybody else. That's why everybody's so amazed at the Warriors. Because what we see is very talented basketball players playing the right brand of basketball where everybody gets it. Some days it's Steph Curry's night. Some days it's KD's night. But with John Wall, he always got the ball in his hand, not letting people do them.
I don't think anybody else in the team besides Bradley Beal could initiate their offense. No one else really could create their own shot. The ball.
If you move the ball, son, you don't have to be the guy to get the assist. Yeah. Stacking up assists is a selfish act, also.
Yeah, because you.
It could be
dominating the ball to get assists is a selfish act.
Well, if you're dominating to get assists, but if you're controlling the offense and in the result of that you're getting assists,
let it fly. Yeah.
If it were better if if he gets 5 assists less and somebody else gets 3 assists more.
Yes.
Because it's the same thing. Like, more people is involved. The ball, everybody touches the ball. Yo, it's hard to play without.
Yo, he should be embarrassed, son. Your team goes 5. Yeah. You should be embarrassed.
All right, so how do you feel about Westbrook and Chris Paul? Chris Paul and Westbrook are leading the league, are top 5 in MVP voting right now.
Okay, that's why
they're the same player.
That's why Chris Paul can't beat the Spurs in the playoffs. All they do, they trap him.
Chris Paul never played more than 3 games in the playoffs.
Nah, he played against the Spurs one day and got whooped.
Played 3 games and got injured. Series had to finish without him.
The minute Kevin Durant and James Harden both left Westbrook's side, they in the running for being the best players in the world. Russell Westbrook is in the same boat as John Wall.
Yeah.
They dominate the ball too much. They're not making the best plays for their team all the time. They stacking up numbers. But, yo, that's not always the way to go.
Okay, this is a nice sample set of 6 games. Let's see what happens the following 6 games. Let's see what happens in this stretch run
to the playoffs. Growing up, growing up, Brooklyn, Canarsie, we was Team Marbury, straight out of Coney Island.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, every time Marbury had a team, they was cool. He had his 29 for a long time. The minute they put Jay Kidd in there behind him, whether it be in the Suns or the Nets, those teams started balling. So don't give me numbers. You gotta have the basketball IQ to take your team to the next level. Don't give me numbers, man. D.A., Steph, Marbury, I loved Marbury. But when Kidd would come behind him and show him this is how you really run a team, I don't care about your 29.
Same squad, too.
Yo.
Okay, but Kidd would flip it and have 9 and 20, but he still dominated the ball. He just did it better.
Kidd would throw the pass before the pass sometimes. Yeah. The hockey assists, as they say.
He gets that, but he still would have 20 assists. No, I'm lying.
But last night, the Oklahoma City Thunder went in Oakland and beat up on the Golden State Warriors.
Shockingly.
Now, first, I want to talk about these Warriors because last week, their coach Steve Kerr said, yo, my team is fried. Kind of saying, like, mentally, these guys are fatigued.
No excuses.
No, y'all dudes been together for 2 years. But he seems to be right because these guys seem to be coming apart at the seams. They're getting ejected every other game. Draymond Green, I think, got ejected last night. KD got ejected the other day. Yo, are these dudes going to even be around in June? Because the Rockets is nipping on their heels. One other thing, with these guys seem to be losing their cool, we seen Kobe and get at referees. We seen Michael Jordan put his mouth in his T-shirt and get at referees. But they never get tossed from a game. It never cost them games. And I want to say that these guys and the Warriors will pull it together. But no, we already seen Draymond get suspended in the NBA Finals. Terrible. In the finals, that I think that suspension cost them guys the finals.
Terrible.
Yo, they going to be able to hold it together?
I hope so, because that's my team. But at the end of the day, the NBA has turned into the WWE wrestling. These guys are divas, and it just makes it look bad. It makes the product look bad. It's taken away from the quality of the games. So I can't say they're going to fix that portion of their game, but I honestly don't think that anybody's beating these guys come playoffs.
Yo, they look like loose cannons. Draymond, the other day, had like blood in his mouth and stuff for the rep. But yo, D, you ever got a tech in college basketball? Or 4 years, you ever got a technical?
I think so, yeah. But for a scuffle,
though. Not for talking. Don't talk it, right?
Don't talk to them, bro. I'm from the islands. They don't understand what I say. So.
Yo, I actually told the ref that one time. So. The ref came to me like, yo, tell him to stop talking to me. I'm like, yo, ref, be honest. You don't understand what he's saying. And he smirked like, damn, you got me. But yo, D.A., son, what's the Warriors? They still a team to beat. Are you concerned about, I guess, excitement, their ability to get thrown out of games, the lack of control?
I think why I'm still high on the Warriors, because I know what they could do. We've seen them play. I've seen the Rockets. I've seen James Harden.
Who you got?
The Warriors.
That's it.
I've seen Harden. Like, I've seen Harden lose to the Spurs without Kawhi in game 6 to get sent home. Like, I've seen that.
He got help this year, though.
Oh, Chris Paul, another ball-dominating point guard?
He lost to the Jazz. Like, I've seen that. So I'm not really too high on the Rockets or the Thunders. So that's why I give them a pass. And the Cavs is garbage anyway. But I'm just looking at it. It's like, yo, They really got to get it together, though.
But hold on. You mentioned the Thunder. The Thunder been on a streak lately. They just came out of Oakland where they beat up on them boys.
Yeah, Thunder's balling.
They've been putting it together, dude. You're not a fan of? You don't believe in the movement just yet?
You like stats. Pull up. You like stats, right?
I got no service here. I won't pull it up quick.
Yo, pull up a stats where Russ goes 11 for 18.
Oh.
And
doesn't happen.
He was
ever.
Really efficient. Like Russ don't play like that.
He went to the Obia man that morning.
Yeah. So I'm not you. They come with like Paul George hitting everything.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen.
So seven game series, KD, Steph.
It will be too much.
I'll take my money with them, man.
And the crazy thing is, you mentioned that, and that's the way the Cavs won their one game in the finals. They shot out of their mind. Nobody could miss. And then what happened after that?
Yeah,
sent them home.
But they do, to piggyback on what Will said, they do have to clean this up. The dejection and stuff. He got 12 technicals already for the year.
That's crazy. Who does?
Dre.
Draymond
does. All you need is 16. You know when you're going to get 16? In the playoffs. Then you're going to start missing games after every technical. Then you're going to start missing games for your team, and you can't have that. I think it's a little bit immature.
Yo, he already cost his team a finals. So I couldn't believe it. As a basketball fan, I was disappointed that he got himself kicked out of a finals, yo. Like, you ain't got no self-control, boy?
Probably not.
Dennis Rodman wasn't doing that.
Yeah, Dennis
Rodman. And the one was, he
I
was
don't
crazy.
Know, man. Dennis Rodman, yo, no. Things are different now. Everything is high, and the camera is focused on these guys. Draymond Green, sometimes he is a bit excessive, but a lot of times the technicals foul, the refs are blowing that whistle with no conscience. And yes, he has a history. He's going to get it. He deserves it. But at the same time, you can't give him a tech for last week's game.
Like, he knows that. Like, we know that. Like, adjust. Like, you're a pro.
Right.
Like, don't touch the ball after the official. Like, you know they're looking at you already. Like, just chill. Like, he's an adult. Like, you're supposed to make adjustments. You're not talking about, like, a 12-year-old kid who just started playing ball. You're a pro. You're getting paid the big bucks. Can't keep costing your team game like that, man. That's disappointing.
Told you, the season hasn't started yet, man. We still preseason.
Yeah, the Cavs wish they were back in preseason, man. The Cavs are struggling, son, to say the least. And it's not just what we see on the court. It's like reality TV over there. It's Real Housewives of Akron. It's Love and Hip Hop.
Ohio.
It's Black Ink, Ohio. Like, it's all of that, son. What came out recently? Isaiah Thomas, he's made comments in the media talking about, he said the other day that we didn't make adjustments.
Yeah, he blamed the coaches.
When you say we don't make adjustments, that's a bow and arrow to your coach's head. Okay, we know that he attacked Kevin Love in a team meeting recently.
Today, LeBron exploded on the Cavs upper brass staff and basically the entire locker room today, calling everybody out. The worst team meeting in NBA history, reporters said.
So, Finn, what do you think of the Cavs situation? Are they a few things? Are they going to make it out the East?
Yes.
Who's to blame for this fiasco?
LeBron.
Please explain why. Because I agree with you. I want to see why you put it on LeBron's head.
When you're the captain of the ship, everything falls on you. You're the man of the house, everything falls on you. So regardless of whose fault, who's to take the blame, who you think should take the blame, if you're the man of the house, you got to clean up your house.
Yes.
You can't have the inmates running the asylum.
And LeBron has always gotten his reputation of being such a great guy and keeping his team together. But this is the third time we've seen his teams implode. The first time he left Cleveland, drama in Miami, and now this.
He's on the way out.
And I think that's a large part of the chaos that goes on around LeBron. In his contract years, he kind of got one foot in the door, one foot out. And that could break up a team dynamic. He begged for the Cleveland Cavaliers not to trade Kyrie Irving. I heard that came out recently. Cavs owner Dan Gilbert was like, yo, if you don't want to give me a commitment for 2 or 3 years, like, I'm not making any more moves for this team for you. I'm not going to allow you to handcuff me while you move on to L.A. or wherever you're going. So I like this. Dan Gilbert is playing hardball with LeBron.
About time.
And LeBron, if you want something, you got to step up, man. You can't just be the leader when it's convenient and it's fun when they're handing out the trophies. When the storm comes, you got to be a leader too.
I got a theory.
Go for it.
I think this is the rope-a-dope. The Cavs are trying to rock everybody to sleep. Oh, they're dysfunctional. Oh, they can't get it together. They're lackadaisical on the court. Playoffs start. They flip the switch, and they turn into a well-oiled machine. They're knocking everybody out. Four-game sweeps all the way to the finals. And then they're going to run into Golden State and get destroyed. That's just my theory.
That's what happened last year. They struggled last year, too. And we thought it's obviously it's worse. But last year they struggled too.
Yeah, like I thought Toronto had them last year.
Yeah. I just don't get it gets annoying. Like every day we talk about LeBron or we talk about but we don't even talk about the game.
Yeah.
It's always some information is leaked. Like all of a sudden Cleveland is like the bigger media machine in America. Like
WWE, man.
In Cleveland, yeah.
Like and LeBron gotta come up. You gotta make a smart comment. Like, yo, just calm down, man. You know, do shorter interviews. Spend more time on the court. Spend more time with the guys. Get it together.
How much more time you want to spend? He played the most minutes in NBA
less
history.
Less passive-aggressive tweets. Like, all type of shit.
Yeah, stop the sucker moves, LeBron. Stop the sucker moves, please.
Yeah, he's just doing too much. Like, yo, and I don't understand everybody talking about their team. I was like, the Cleveland Cavaliers got a better team than Toronto right now. Toronto got?
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry and...
Yeah, they have the same squad. I feel like they have the same squad for the past 10 years.
But so why aren't they playing better? You got D Wade. I mean, regardless of how he's still D Wade though.
He's still playing.
You got Green. Is you got IT. Like, why aren't you guys playing better?
IT let me down honestly this year. I was the IT bandwagon last year, and I was saying Cleveland got the best of that trade. We're gonna see. Watch.
Right.
IT is gonna come back, but right. I don't think he bounced back from injury yet. I can't call it. I don't know what a hip injury does to a player. I never had one of those. So I don't know if it's injury. I don't know if the team chemistry is different. I can't call it. I can't say if it's LeBron, one foot in, one foot out. But something is going on in Cleveland, and I don't want to blame IT just yet. That's my dude.
Today is National Signing Day, where you see all these high school pimple-faced kids putting college hats on as they sign to college football. Yo, I hate seeing them kids on TV, son. Yo, D.A., son, you an island boy. You ain't with all that attention. What you think about that National Signing Day and these kids putting, getting press conferences for choosing which college they're going to go to?
I don't know. I don't get the big deal. I don't follow it. Like, what's the big deal? Like, you pick your school, you know, do your thing. You know, it's funny, though. You got to come up with a number how many people suck in college. Signing the press conference.
Word.
Like a lot, I would never do that. Yo. Never. I would just, you know, tell the real. Coach I'm coming.
That's it.
Yeah.
If I ever have a son in that situation, like, yo, you ain't doing anything yet, son. You didn't earn this press conference and exactly. Everybody clapping, and you're going to get kicked out of school in 6 months for stealing laptops or some dumb shit.
Yeah.
But, yo, it's funny because Warren G's son just signed to USC.
Oh, wow.
And Snoop was up there dancing.
Staying home. That's what's up.
What's up. Yo, my downloads in Dominica is going to be through the roof this week, son. Through the roof, yo. Yo, that's a wrap on episode number 5. My man Fent Boogie.
Yep.
DA.
What up?
We out.